Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Stage Right, the show that looks at the lack of conservative voices in theater and asks, why? With your host, Rocky Benisher.
Oh, I can't wait. I can't wait. I'll make sure everything's done so I can watch the Oscars tonight, because I just love seeing all those left-wingers together griping about American Sniper. Hello, everybody. Rocky Benisher here. Welcome to another edition of Stage Right, the show that asks the question, hey, conservatives, why don't we hear from you in the theater? How come we're not hearing much from you in the arts in general? What's going on? Anyway, if you'd like to call in today, we are at 347-884-9659. That number again, 347-884-9659. And you could reach us also via email at stagerightaudio1, that's stagerightaudio1 at gmail.com. Well, speaking of the Oscars, you know, they roll out the red carpet for the Oscars folks, and they, you know, all these lame-brained celebrities walk down the red carpet and smile and gush, and you look at their fashion. Those are the A-listers. Let me tell you something. At Stage Right, we get the A-listers, not those guys, right here. And today's show is no exception. Ladies and gentlemen, we have a guest today who is a major figure in discussing the lack of conservative voices in theater. You know who I'm talking about. It is David Marcus. David, welcome to Stage Right. Is he there? David, are you there? Hello, testing. Is David there? All righty. Well, I have him online here, folks, but yeah, seems to be a problem. There's always something going on here at Stage Right that drives us crazy. Let me take a look here and see if we can't fix this so I'm not boring you all to shred. David, are you there?
I'm here.
Okay, sorry about that.
Okay.
I can hear you, yes. I'm so sorry.
No problem.
Yeah, well, it doesn't matter that I'm seething inside now because of what goes on when I'm trying to broadcast these days. But at any rate, David, welcome to Stage Right. Tell our listenership, who is growing by leaps and bounds, by the way, tell them about yourself, what you're doing, what you're involved with.
Sure. I'm the artistic director of a small theater company called Blue Box World that's based in Brooklyn. And we do a show. Our main show is a 10-minute play series called Sticky that we've been doing for about a decade. And then I'm also a senior contributor for The Federalist, a daily web outlet out of D.C., even though I'm in New York, that writes a lot about politics and also culture and the arts. So those are my two main things. And I also have my own blog, which is, you know, I think great minds think alike, because my blog's called Spotlight Write. But I write less there now,
right,
because I'm usually writing for The Federalist.
Well, being on The Federalist is very impressive. Those of you out there who have not checked out The Federalist, you really ought to if you really want to read some good and groundbreaking articles and essays on culture and politics and religion and policy and all those good things. And their senior editor is David Harsanyi, whom I read all the time. So I found that very impressive. But
yeah, right.
Don't be shy. Yeah, and don't be shy, David, because you've also had your work in National Review Online and City
That's
Journal
true.
And PJ Media. Yeah, I mean,
yeah.
As I said, A-listers all the way.
Well, you know, I think there's a rising interest in this notion of the conservative counterculture, of conservative arts. So, you know, I think Andrew Breitbart had a lot to do with this, and now I think a lot of outlets are starting to realize that it's an important issue to deal with, including your own. And what you're doing is very near to my heart. I think it's great.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you. And as I said before, our audience is really growing. So there are a lot more people now interested in these kind of counterculture or just under the radar groups that are preaching the conservative way of thinking.
That's great.
So, David, you had a play called 501 See Me, and that play was represented at the Republican Theater Festival in Philadelphia in 2012. I'd like to talk a little bit about that play and then talk about a piece that you had recently written for The Federalist. First of all, my question, just out of sheer curiosity, is did you attend the production?
I did. It was great. It was really a lot of fun.
Let's tell everybody what this play is about. Could you describe it for us?
Sure. Sort of briefly, it's three characters. It's a married couple and a rather eccentric friend of theirs. And the friend of theirs is asking the married couple to be on his board of directors. And it turns out it's that the board of directors is for this guy because he is going not-for-profit as a human being. So, you know, the idea is, you know, you can give him money and then deduct it from your taxes, and that you'd be doing this because his way of living and his lifestyle is so sort of important and extraordinary that it's, you know, that everybody sort of needs to support it. So it was kind of a satirical look at the nonprofit theater system, you know, where the idea really is like, theater can't pay for itself. It can't, you know, it's not going to make enough money to support itself. So we need the government and we need donors and we need all of these people to step in. And, you know, that was the,
No, go ahead. I'm sorry. Didn't mean.
Yeah, so that was the basic concept behind the play. The wife of the couple is very excited by it. The husband of the couple is a little dubious. You know, the subtitle of the play is a play on moral hazard and, you know, the husband's opinion is, you know, shouldn't this guy, you know, wouldn't it be better for this guy if he was actually able to support himself rather than, you know, having either the government or donors support him? And, you know, they sort of argue about that a little bit and about the nature of sort of government support.
Support himself? What a blasphemous notion.
I know, it's true.
I told you. You may be an A-lister, but you are a radical at heart. Support yourself, my goodness. At any rate, yeah, so the three characters in this play, folks, is Jack. He's the one who is he's created the 501C for himself. And then the married couple are Janice and Pete. Pete is, as you said, dubious, skeptical. Janice, she seems a little dense. Is that what you were going for?
Well, I mean, I guess so. You know, it's a comedy, so I don't, you know, I mean, but I think to some extent the character of Janice, she has a sort of speech at the end where she talks about how she's disappointed in the apartment that they have, that they should have purchased a more expensive apartment. And, you know, her husband says, well, you know, but they wanted an adjustable mortgage and we would have been spending so much more money. And she says, you know, no, we wouldn't. The government would have come in and helped us, you know, some of which was going on in 2009 when I wrote the play. And, you know, Janice isn't necessarily wrong about that. Like, I don't think that's necessarily being dense. I think that's, you know, sort of an assumption that a lot of people have about what the responsibility of the state is towards them and towards their lifestyle and so, yeah, no, I don't think she's dead. I think she's pretty quick, you know. She just has a, you know,
she's speaking
very aggressive view of the world. Yeah, okay.
So I'll admit to being unfair with the word dense. But she does say a couple of times, Obama is so awesome. Obama's awesome. So, you know,
remember the play originally went up in 2009. I wrote it shortly after the election, and I think, you know, it's hard 6 years later with some of the bumps that he's had. It's hard to go back and remember, especially in places like New York City, just how over the top the adulation was of, you know, everything was going to change now. This was the watershed moment of American history, and of course it hasn't quite turned out that way. But
that's not certainly
the expectation and the vibe in 2009.
No, you're right. And I think it's a good thing to put it in its context. I mean, that was around the time that Chris Matthews was getting excited, thrills up his leg, right, from Obama speaking. Yes, right.
Yeah.
So What Jack says at one point, he says early on, if he's describing the 501k me, and I have to laugh every time I hear that program, he says, Pete asks him, why would anybody give you money? And he says, well, it depends on the particular granting organizations and individuals, but basically donors realize how vital I really am to our society and that there must be a place for me, especially in the current political and economic conditions. I mean, every great civilization has. Think about it like this. Without significant support, we could lose me or see me basically washed out by the commercial markets unable to create my unique and experimental existence. Now, number one, thank you, folks. Thank you for the applause for that reading.
That was great.
Thank you. Number one, if you fail to see the satire there, I think you're missing a lot with this play, with this wonderful play. But let me ask you this. Are you poking fun in any way about this notion that we have that everybody in society is vital. Everybody in society is entitled, deserving. Were you poking fun of it, or am I going nuts?
To some degree, although I'd say the main thing, you know, that speech that you just read could be taken almost word for word from a lot of materials that nonprofit theater companies send out when they're asking people for money. So, it was, for me, it was more about these nonprofit organizations who are saying, particularly artistic organizations, who are saying, you know, look how important we are. If you know, we can't support ourselves. Ticket sales aren't going to cut it. But think about how horrible it will be if we're not here. So we need you to, you know, to give us some money. And I just thought that, you know, when you bring that to an individual level, it starts to sound fairly ridiculous. So that was more, you know, what I was looking at was really poking fun at the nonprofit arts system, which for me really is the cornerstone of the progressive hegemony in theater. I think if we were in a more open and free market situation in American theater, you'd see much greater diversity of opinion on our stages.
Oh, boy, do I agree. And we're going to talk about that based on the essay that you had on the Federalist recently. So I absolutely agree with that, with what you're saying. Just a quick question about the production itself. Were you pleased with the production of 501 See Me?
Oh, yeah. I thought it was great. I didn't have a chance to be at any rehearsals or anything. And I had actually been in the premiere of the play. I played Jack in New York City at Bowery Poetry Club the first time it went up in 2009.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's always fun to go see someone else play a role that you've played or that you've... And the kids were great. I mean, you know, there's a phenomenal amount of acting talent in Philly, and not just in my show, in all of the shows. You know, Kara did a great job getting directors, and those guys did a great job casting, and yeah, it was great.
Did the audience get it? Did they get the humor of your play?
I think so, and I actually think, you know, the actor who played Jack down there, I believe his name is Brendan Norton, and he's since... you know, done some bigger and better stuff down there on the stages in Philly. And he's so funny that I think even, you know, even if they weren't necessarily sympathetic to the viewpoint, he was quite funny. So, yeah, I mean, at least the night I went there were definitely laughs and people were having a good time. So.
Excellent. Overall, what did you think of the festival itself? You got to see. Now, pardon me for not knowing this. They didn't put all the plays on at one night. It was certain shows on certain nights. Is that right?
No, I think they did them all.
That's
my recollection. I think there were either seven or eight, and I know there was an intermission. None of them were too long. I think they probably ran between like 10 and 15 minutes each. But yeah, no, I think it ran, I forget if it ran for four or six or however many nights it ran, but... yeah, they were all quite good. You know, there were a couple that were written actually by people who weren't conservative but were interested in sort of writing from that perspective. I think, frankly, because at the time, Kara really had trouble finding a you know, honest to goodness conservative playwrights. I think she had an easier time today, which you know, is a good thing given the fact that it's only, you know, 3 years later. I think she'd be able to fill that out now. But the plays were great, and it was just great to see. One thing that struck me is it was a wonderful experience, I think, seeing the actors and the crew and the directors and everybody involved who clearly didn't share a lot of these political beliefs, but were really open to the idea of presenting them fairly and you know, with love. And you know, if we can do that on both sides, we're going to be an awful lot better than we will be if we just batten down the hatches, point our fingers, and, you know, keep saying you're wrong.
Exactly. You're wrong. No, I'm kidding. Yes, exactly. You know, you I have spoken with or talked or either on the air or via email with now five of the playwrights. And you were the first one who actually was at the production. So I was really interested in your take on that. And I spoke with Kara Blewin. And I've been trying to get her behind the scenes to do it again, considering that the Democrats are going to be have their convention in 2016 in Philadelphia. Yeah. Beating out the town I'm in, by the way, Columbus, Ohio.
The town that I'm in, Brooklyn, New York.
That's right. This is kismet, folks. It's kismet.
That's right.
So I've asked her. She said... I think she's considering it, and I said I will help from any way I can. Plus, you know, I fancy myself a conservative playwright too, so we'll see what we can do. All right, so that's wonderful. Thank you so much for that information. Let's talk about this recent essay that you have in the Federalist called Five Principles for the Rising Conservative Counterculture. And the subheading here is, as conservatives begin creating a counterculture in the arts, here are five principles to guide our efforts. So you do talk about the Republican Theater Festival. And by the way, I did ask Kara why Republican and not conservative. And her answer was, God, I shouldn't have said that. She said, I should have went with conservative. So, okay, so we know next time it'll be called the Conservative Theater Festival. That's right. Okay, so... first of all, you described it as more of a curiosity than the start of a movement. So how do we get the movement to start then? If that didn't trigger stuff, some kind of a movement, how do we do it?
Well, I think that there has been something of a movement started. You know, I opened the essay with a quote from Andrew Breitbart that says, politics is downstream from culture, right? So,
right.
You know, culture is really where people are sort of getting their ideas about the world, and then they're going to be voting based on these ideas that they get. I think since Breitbart's death, there have been a couple of outlets. Washington Free Beacon is one. Breitbart.com itself is one. PJ Lifestyle, mm-hmm. The Federalist, who are all spending a little more time thinking about and writing about culture and the arts and supporting conservatives in the arts. There are also different organizations of people within entertainment and the arts who are starting to get together. And, you know, there was an older generation, I think, that was a little scared to be acknowledged as a conservative. And, there were sort of fears of blacklisting, or there were fears of... For the younger generation coming up, there isn't that fear, and people are a little more willing to be vocal. So, you know, Things are happening. Liberty Island magazine, which is an online fiction magazine that's really wonderful, that David Bernstein and Adam Bello have set up, you know, is really an opportunity for content creators. And I know you've mentioned them on the show before, and they don't really do plays so much. But, you know, I think that, you know, I know I've been in conversations with people to try to open up new opportunities, submission opportunities and such for conservative playwrights or, you know, for people with different points of view. And I think as opposed to a decade ago when nobody was talking about this, again, except for maybe Breitbart, now I think there's a realization that this is important stuff.
I'm thinking about doing something like that here in Columbus, Ohio, And Kara had said that what she would love to see is this happening all across the country. You know, little pockets all over the country having these conservative theater festivals to hear another point of view. I don't think personally what we are asking, we're not, do you agree with me, David? We're not asking that we take the main seat at the theatrical table. We just want a seat there. We want to be heard.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, I don't think that, I mean, look, you know, as I say in the article, changing gatekeepers is a long-term proposition. Like, we're, you know, conservatives are not going to be at the forefront of this, you know, for a very long time, if ever. It really is, as you say, just, you know, to have some influence there, to have David Mamet not be the only conservative playwright that anybody's ever heard of. So
exactly right. So let's talk about the five things you say we need to do to make this movement, to give this movement some traction here. And the first thing you say is a free and open marketplace of ideas. And this is where you're talking about the nonprofits specifically, kind of the things you were alluding to in 501c3, correct?
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, we already talked a little bit about that. You know, almost by its very nature, the nonprofit system is somewhat liberal or progressive because you have to justify this government money by saying that there's some social goal involved as opposed to simply entertaining people, right? This is why comedy clubs don't get government grants.
right.
So, there's already this element, you know, imbued there. Plus, the nonprofit sector is itself, people, by pretty liberal folks. So I don't think that conservatives can mirror this model. I think we want to be really careful about the ways in which we use nonprofit sources. I think there's probably a few that are appropriate, but in general, I think conservatives ought to be creating a marketplace where these things, live or die on their own, and whatever gets participation. And I really stress this in the article. I'm not saying that which makes the most money is the best art. I'm really focused on participation because participation can always be monetized. So it's really about getting people to want to participate and come and want to experience it. And that's the marketplace that people should be. But just quickly on this, one thing that I've said for a long time is, you know, when I meet the talented young kids who are coming to New York to start a theater company, and they are, you know, they're fantastic. Mm-hmm. Their first question is never, how am I going to generate an audience? Their first question is always, how am I going to get a grant? And that's a problem.
Right. 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 So we need to build our audiences. The money will come if we build our audiences.
Yes. That's right.
Okay. Second point you make is what you call individuality over identity. And basically, in a nutshell, what I think you're saying is we value artists for their work, not the demographic that we can fit them in. Do you want to expand on that?
I mean, that's pretty much it. It's a big topic. I mean, that could be a half-hour show all on its own. But yeah, I mean, I think that there's a growing tendency within theater to really focus on, you know, this focus on sort of issues of diversity, which are important because obviously we don't want anybody excluded. At the same time, you know, if we're looking at everything through this lens of privilege and race and gender, and we're kind of losing what's essential about the individual work of art and the individual artist. So I think conservatives need to be paying less attention to what a person looks like and more attention to, you know, the merit and entertainment value of their work.
Bravo, hear, hear. Absolutely. Number three, because I'm watching the clock countdown, number three is advocacy of American values, where you say that artists can criticize while respecting and promoting the basic values of their culture. I absolutely agree, but here's my devil's advocate question. Isn't that what the left says they are doing? They love this country, but they're pointing out its flaws for its betterment.
Yeah, I think that most people on the left would say that, and where I would take issue with that is I'm not convinced, and I don't want to, you know, even though I'm from New York here, I don't want to tread to, I'm going to step in Giuliani's footsteps here, but I do think there's a difference between criticizing the actions of the government and suggesting that the foundational principles of the United States themselves are to blame, that the system, and that's what you're always hearing about, sort of systemic oppression or systemic problems. And it's not entirely clear to me that the left views basic American values like free speech, for example, as necessarily being a great thing. To you know, and
true.
That's a little harsh to say, but I think it's true. I don't think that things like free speech and freedom of religion and some of the foundational principles of the country are quite as important as the results that they want to see in the world.
Well, you know, I think that what the left is doing now, and what I think they're doing now is they're saying, yeah, we support free speech. However, if that speech is hateful, oppressive, or whatever other adjective you want to give it that, you know, gets their juices flowing, that's right, and then it becomes no longer free. It must be censored. Yet in the same breath, they say, we do not believe in censorship. So I'm with you on that cynicism. I will say that.
Yeah.
Then you talk about open sources like Liberty Island. We have promoted them here. Yes, I can't convince them that plays are meant to be seen and not read, but okay. All right. So I lost that battle, but I'm still going to win this war. Any other ones that you can think of other than Liberty Island?
I mean, you know, I think that even, you know, even, and I don't want to speak out of turn here because I'm sure that they get a lot of submissions, but when you look at the list of contributors for the Federalist, I mean, they count into the hundreds now. And I know that the editors there, for example, you know, if there is a topic or if there is something, you know, about a book or the arts or something like that, you know, they're very approachable. You know, there's other conservative websites. People need content, you know, and if you can make good content, there's some outlets there for you to, you know, to try to get people to help you to spread it around, or even, you know, even just a blog or a show like yours is, you know, I'm not surprised at all that your listenership is growing because, you know, once you get out there and you're saying interesting things and you're saying things people haven't heard before, that's going to start to attract, the crowd.
Oh, absolutely, sure. And we hope that continues to work. And I'm looking at maybe putting up kind of a website for Stage Right and, you know, maybe posting some of these conservative plays for people to take a look at or, you know, post articles and things. So I'm thinking about it. The wheels are turning, David. The wheels are turning.
Right.
And
it's a lot. You know, it's a lot to have to do.
It's a lot.
But, you know.
Yeah. But I love it. So, and finally, we have courage. Courage. And I can't help but think of, you know, what makes the mast on the flag to wave? Courage.
Yeah.
But other than the Wizard of Oz, you say, if conservatives with a story to tell, a song to sing, or a picture to paint, summon the courage to create and share, change can come, and that change will be deep and structural, not just a cultural fad of the moment. And I also like what you say at the very end. You say, we can win all the elections we want, but if we aren't competing in culture, all those victories will be very short-lived. And yeah, it is ultimately about making our impact on the culture. Let me ask you the final question. Do you agree with what I've been saying, and that is that we are a center-right country, but our arts reflect a very different world?
Yes, I would suggest that part of the reason for that, and this gets back to Kara's very good idea about places like Columbus and places in the South and the Midwest creating more art, our art and culture tends to come from the coast. It tends to come from New York and L.A. New York and L.A. are not center-right. New York and L.A. are not even center. They're left.
Right.
So there is this sort of strange imbalance where most of the country probably is center-right, but the people who are creating their culture most certainly aren't. So that is something that I think would be, you know, useful to address.
Well, we need to do something about that. But ladies and gentlemen, we are out of time. So David Marcus, thank you so much for your participation here on Stage Right. We look forward to reading more and seeing more from you.
Well, thanks so much for having me. I think what you're doing with the show is great.
Thank you. Thank you. Folks, we'll see you next week. Thank you. We're exiting Stage Right.